prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror films, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And we're still in April.
Showers of blood.
April showers of blood, which means we pick a movie that has blood or anything related to blood in the title. And my pick is Scream Bloody Murder from 1973, directed by Mark B. Ray. It's also known as Claw of Terror, Matthew, Captive Female, and Amputee with an Axe. I like that title.
I like Claw of Terror.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the only trailer I could find for it was the Captive Female.
I'm sorry, lady. I need the house.
Oh, God!
Matthew loved this house, so he killed the occupants and moved in. Only he didn't have a woman to share it with, so he took one.
I've lots of friends in my neighborhood. They'll miss me. They'll come looking for me.
They won't know where to look. They'll look for a little while, and then they'll stop looking. And you'll be here with me forever and ever.
The Captive Female.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I know I mentioned last episode that it was at 666 views on Letterboxd.
Yeah. Oh, Adam, thank you for falling on that sword.
Yep. He became 667. So I know, Erica, you didn't want to break that.
I did not want that to be me, but thankfully Adam was nice. He did that. He did that for us. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Adam. But right now it's at 674 views on Letterboxd. It's streaming all over the place. It's on Tubi. It's on YouTube. It's public domain, so you can find it pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. Internet Archive, Dailymotion. They're all pretty rough. That's why we need a release.
Yes. I mean, you picked it, so that means
like, I feel good about it.
It's got like a 69% chance now. Ooh. I don't know. I just threw that out because whatever.
I mean, you can't go wrong with 69. 69 means it's definitely getting released. That's better than 100%.
Yeah.
There have been some rough releases of it on DVD. Apprehensive Films released a DVD in 2011 under the Amputee with an Axe title. Mm. And Mill Creek Entertainment also released this 12-disc DVD set called Chilling Classics, one of those massive sets that you find.
Oh, bless you, Mill Creek, for all you do with those.
Yeah, 50 movies in this.
I've got so many of those on my shelf.
They're from like the 50s, the 60s, horror, sci-fi, thriller genre. It also includes some of our favorites, or my favorites. Lady Frankenstein's in that set.
Oh, yeah.
Belle from Hell is actually what is on the disc with Scream Bloody Murder.
Oh, nice.
So, nice pairings. I think like Deep Red was in. I mean, really, really mix. Okay, so a synopsis of Scream Bloody Murder. As usual, there'll be spoilers in the summary. And once we dive into the episode, we're going to spoil the hell out of the film. So, if you haven't watched it, you have a million ways to right now. Okay, a young kid, Matthew, kills his father by running over him with a farm tractor and loses his own hand when jumping off the out-of-control tractor and getting it stuck under the blades. He's institutionalized for the murder, and when he turns 18, he's released from the psychiatric hospital, now equipped with a sweet claw, or hook, where his hand used to be. And when he gets home, he learns that his mother is just remarried, and he kills his annoying new stepfather with an axe, then kind of accidentally kills his mom by pushing her down. Yeah. She hits her head on a rock. He immediately leaves town, murdering a nice newlywed couple who gives him a ride. And he quickly meets a prostitute / artist.
Sex worker.
Yeah, we don't use prostitute, sorry. Named Vera, who he decides to call Daisy, which is his mom's name, or which was his mother's name. Mm-hmm. He's immediately obsessed with her, and he kills one of her customers, who is, of course, a drunk sailor.
Yes.
Because that's what dirty sailors do.
Yeah.
And Matthew wants to impress Vera, so he finds a mansion and kills the old lady homeowner and her caretaker, and also the dog, which we'll talk about because that's terrible. He takes Vera to the house, and when she wants to leave, he freaks out and ties her up, holding her captive, trying to force her to fall in love with him. And then we'll get into, you know, what happens and how it actually ends. So Scream Bloody Murder was co-written and directed by Mark B. Ray. And apart from Scream, he only directed two other projects. His first was a film in 1969, a drama called Wild Gypsies. I couldn't find this one anywhere to watch.
I couldn't even find it on my legal adjacent sources.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it sounds kind of interesting. A group of gypsies vow vengeance on a runaway who murdered one of their own. Lust and intrigue run throughout the story about the mysterious and wild life of the wandering gypsies.
Yeah, but a lot of the reviews on Letterboxd said it was boring. So I don't feel like we're missing anything.
No, yeah, it's very low rated, but you know, that always intrigues me.
Of course.
He also wrote the screenplay for that. And his only other directed project is a workout video.
Yeah.
With, do you say Sandal or Sandal?
Sandal.
Sandal Bergman. It's called Sandal Bergman's Body.
This is a 5-minute workout which uses all the parts of your body. It warms up and tones all of your muscles from your feet to your head and neck. It's a great way to start the day. It makes you feel alive and ready to take on any challenge. So put down that cup of coffee and get the kinks out of your bones and your blood going.
And yes. It's just the actress Sandal Bergman, sometimes with men, doing these aerobic routines.
Yeah, it's great.
It is great. We watched it. We didn't watch it together.
No, yeah.
But we did watch it. Bergman's obviously well known for Conan the Barbarian. Yes. Red Sonja, she's Spangle, and Hell comes to Frogtown with the best Roddy
That's
Piper.
That's right. Yeah.
So she has the physique to do a workout video. So 100%. I was like, okay, what's this? Sandal Bergman directed by Mark B. Okay, I'm watching it.
Yeah, of course. It's on YouTube. And you know, the great thing about something like that is you're sitting there watching it and you're like, I can't sit and watch an exercise video.
I was going to ask you.
I got up and I did some exercise. Yeah. John came in the room. John was like, oh, fuck yeah, we're doing, that's Sandal Bergman. We're doing a workout. I'm doing some, you know, calisthenics and yeah.
So you did do some of these exercises.
I did some of the exercises.
I did too. It's very, I mean, workout videos, my mom had one, but it was like the Jane Fonda. Yeah.
Yep.
And like, I'd walk in and she'd be doing them and I'm like, what the hell is this?
I'm into it now. Cause especially I just went to the doctor and apparently I have high cholesterol and she's like, you need to exercise more. And I'm like, God damn it. All right. Sandal Bergman, take me away.
Yeah. I mean, they're very choreographed. She was like in a lot of Bob Fosse. She was a dancer, a lot of Bob Fosse productions. Mm-hmm. So she, obviously these choreographs are, I mean, I'm not going to say they're incredibly difficult, but you can't, it's not like you're going to sit there and I was just trying to keep up and I was like, fuck this. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm just going to dance. This is my Running Man. I tore an ACL, but I did have a question though, you know, like with every workout video, same for this one, but it has that little disclaimer in the beginning, please consult your physician before you do these exercises. I mean, I wonder if people actually go to their doctor and be like, can I do this workout video? And does a doctor have to watch it before he can answer? I'm like,
yeah, I'm like, why would anyone have to ask their doctor, is it okay if I exercise?
Right. <You know>? Yeah, no, it was entertaining. It was like 60 minutes, which, yeah. You know,
it's a workout video, but it's honestly, and I'm 100% basing this off of my memory of my mom watching Jane Fonda videos. But this one, it has some like artistic flair to it. You know, some scene transitions and very sort of like smoky lens and some of the music is really fun. This is like, you know, a high production value for a workout video. I mean, or it's like more my aesthetic for a workout video. Like Jane Fonda is like the clean polish. This is for the, you know, the normal suburban mom workout. And I'm like, can I get the scuzzy workout video from the woman who was in Conan? Thanks.
Yeah. No, I feel like Mark B. Ray knew what he was doing. Yeah. Like it was, like you said, the transitions. There's a lot of like, I mean, it's a lot of hip thrusting.
Oh, there's throughout. So much thrusting.
And Mark B. Ray would do some like camera shots like in between Sandahl Bergman's legs. Yes. And I'm like, he knows what's up.
Yeah.
He's selling this.
This is for everyone. This is not just for women who want to like get their bodies in shape like Sandahl. It's for men to watch too.
And Bergman gives some great words of encouragement throughout, you know, the basic, good job, you know, you got this. But then she said, as I was really thrusting my hips, John Travolta, watch out. And I was like, yes. She's doing my internal dialogue right now. So yeah, those were the only three. Mark B. Ray's only directed those three. Can't recommend Wild Gypsies. We didn't see it, but obviously we can recommend Sandahl Bergman's workout video.
We do recommend working out, folks. It's good for you.
Yeah, at home, there's no excuse. Like. Yeah. So yeah, he didn't direct much, but he did. He had an interesting writing career, Mark B. Ray. And like I said, he wrote Wild Gypsies, Scream Bloody Murder. He also co-wrote the story for The Severed Arm, which was released in 1973, same year as Scream Bloody Murder. And he actually sold the rights to the Severed Arm story while he was filming Scream Bloody Murder. So he seemed to have a good kind of early start to his writing career.
Yeah. The guy who co-wrote that with him.
Larry Alexander.
Yeah. Like, I guess I feel like they have something with like severing limbs or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, few writing credits and they have that going for them. I'm going to be honest. I think Severed Arm is boring as fuck.
Yeah, this was released by Vinegar Syndrome a few years ago. I picked it up. It's been sitting on my shelf for years and I put it in. I watched some of the bonus features and stuff. But yeah, the movie itself is just, it's very slow.
Yep. And there's no tension because you know, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who does want to watch it, but like, you know, it's either one or another person that is doing this. So it's really like, oh God, it's so boring. I was so like checking my phone every 5 minutes when I was watching.
Yeah. I think it's worth one watch for sure. Like for those who haven't watched it, the premise I think is really cool. It's about five friends who go caving and a cave-in occurs. They're in there for a few weeks and decide to cut the arm off of one of the men so they could all survive to eat it. Then they're rescued. And apparently the man whose arm's chopped off, he seeks revenge years later. But, you know, the premise sound is way more interesting than the actual progression of the story. When I watched some of the bonus features, I learned that the lead actors were all soap actors. So like the melodramatic overacting kind of made sense at that point. But, and also it's apparently Angus Scrimm's first acting film role.
Oh, okay.
He plays a postman that delivers a severed arm. Yeah. Spoiler alert. But that happens in the first like minute of the movie. Angus Scrimm will be popping up, though. He's also on Scream Bloody Murder. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about him in a minute. But Mark B. Ray, he also co-wrote another horror film, Stepfather 3 from 1992.
Can't vouch for it. Stepfather 2 is where it's at, folks.
No. I mean, I had never seen Stepfather 3. I watched it for the podcast. I've watched all the Stepfathers at this point. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's missing Terry O'Quinn.
That's why I can't recommend it.
Terry
O'Quinn is the stepfather.
He is in part one and two, but part three, this guy, what's his name? Robert Whiteman. His acting is so awkward, terrible even.
Yes.
And I think it fits like a psychotic stepfather, like just an uncomfortable man, like trying to take over. It's like, yeah, it's just awkward. Like, I mean, some of the dialogue reminds me of Scream Bloody Murder, where it seems so unrealistic. They don't feel like real people talking. And I feel like Stepfather, you know, the whole Stepfather idea is a lot like Scream Bloody Murder, where it's about some crazy man fulfilling some fucked up, you know, fantasy.
Yeah.
Hunting people, anyone, anything to achieve it. So it kind of makes sense that Mark B. Ray wrote a sequel for it. So you don't recommend Stepfather 3? I do.
I don't. Nope.
Check it out. Mark B. Ray also wrote a crime comedy called The Stoolie, 1972. This was directed by John G. Avildsen, who did Rocky and Joe, The Karate Kid.
Okay.
So I watched this. It was okay. It's about a stool pigeon in New Jersey who runs off to Miami with like $7,500 of the police department's cash. And he meets a woman there. They get engaged. The cop goes after him and he's kind of a crooked cop, but he spends all the money. And it's okay. It's played as a comedy. It stars Jackie Mason from Caddyshack 2, but it's just really mean humor.
Okay.
And I didn't really find it that funny. The performances were very realistic, good. It's always, and I always enjoy like a grimy 70s New York downtown look, which it has. Mm-hmm. But the men are just grossly perverted. All of them are super horny, which, you know, I get, but it's too much. It's like the whole movie. Mm. The Stoolie, worth the watch. Check it out. okay, so yeah, Mark B. Ray, he did a few films, but his main credits are tied to writing television shows. He kind of balanced out his work in horror by writing for children's television shows, like New Zoo Review, the Mickey Mouse Club, or the New Mickey Mouse Club, Kids Incorporated.
Kids Incorporated, K-I-D-S, something, something.
Yeah, I forgot the song, but now that you're singing it, it's really popping in my head now.
Yeah.
But yeah, he wrote multiple episodes of Mickey Mouse Club and Kids Incorporated in the mid-80s, late 70s for the Mickey Mouse Club, which is interesting. And like he already mentioned, his writing partner, Larry Alexander, who co-wrote most of these movies and television series with Mark B. Ray. Larry Alexander, he was kind of a veteran television writer. He wrote episodes for The $6 Million Man, Charlie's Angels, MacGyver, Chips.
Hell yeah.
A lot of television series. So those are always fun.
Nice.
And yeah, the crew on Scream Bloody Murder really does not have many credits. So there isn't much to talk about. But one notable crew member is the cinematographer, Stephen H. Burham. So Mark B. Ray's Wild Gypsy and Scream Bloody Murder were Burham's first features as DP.
I can see that. Yeah.
Which, you know, awesome. You know, Mark B. Ray gave us Stephen Burham, who you know, went on to work with almost all the De Palma films.
Yeah.
Raising Kane, Mission Impossible, Body Double. He worked with Francis Ford Coppola on Rumblefish and The Outsiders.
I finally watched Rumblefish. I'd been on my watch list forever, and I finally got around to it because I was like, oh, here's my excuse.
Nice. I still haven't watched Rumblefish.
It's good.
Yeah?
It's, you know, I love a young Mickey Rourke. And Matt Dillon, right?
Matt Dillon, yeah.
It's great. It's exactly what you think it is, especially from... you know, Essie Hinton, and it's just, nice. It's got a Criterion. I got it. We got it from the library because we don't own it. So
Burham's a fucking pro.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And I'm going to talk a little about the, you know, the angles and some of the shots in Scream Bloody Murder. Cause you can see kind of his, there's kind of some De Palma moments I feel like in there. Burham also shot The Bride or The House That Cried Murder.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah. Scalpel. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So let's jump into the cast. Is there any other crew members you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, it's not so much crew members, but I did think it was funny. The score.
Yes. Rockwell.
Yeah. I was like, the Rockwell when it showed up, and I like clicked on it through Letterboxd and IMDb, and sure enough, yeah, it's Rockwell and the one song that we all know.
Watching me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I always feel like, why am I trying to sing? I'm just going to insert the audio.
I always feel like somebody's watching me.
I mean, technically that's MJ singing. So,
well, yeah, but that's his song.
It's Rockwell's song though. Yeah.
Yeah. The score in this is very weird. Like there's cool tension building, but then there has like these weird toms and kind of like, it almost sounds like he like clown jokes, like ba-doo. It's Rockwell. Stick with writing one hit.
Stick with your one hit wonder.
Yeah, I like the end, the very end, the end shot. There's a very dramatic score, which really worked. But yeah, I'm embarrassed. I didn't even bring up Rockwell.
That's okay.
So thanks for pointing that out. So the cast it's a small cast of a lot of unknowns, much like the crew. First we have the lead character, the title character, if you will, Matthew, played by Fred Hulbert. And this is his only acting credit. I couldn't locate anything about him at all.
Same.
So he's a mystery.
Are you out there, Fred?
Yeah, we'd like you to be a guest on Unsung Horrors Podcast.
Supplementary podcast for this.
We'll just talk about Sandahl Bergman's body.
There we go.
That's the title.
We'll do the workout together. Yeah. Come on, Fred.
Yeah. Okay. And then Lee Mitchell. Is that how you say her name? Lee?
Lai? I think so.
Yeah. Lee Mitchell. She has dual roles in Scream Bloody Murder. She plays both Vera, the artist sex worker, who Matthew holds captive and is completely obsessed with. And she also plays Matthew's mom, Daisy, which I didn't notice the first time I watched this.
Yeah, I didn't either. And then I went back and looked at, when I was looking at the credits, I was like, why is she double what? And then yeah. I looked and I was like, oh shit, that is her.
Yeah, it helps explain his immediate obsession over Vera.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I guess I blame the bad quality for not even picking up the first like time we're watching.
Right. Yeah. And then some of our listeners, if they've watched it, might not have picked up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mitchell has one other acting credit, a small role in The Incredible Melting Man from 1977, which I fucking love that movie. And I already mentioned that Angus Scrimm has a small role in Scream Bloody Murder. He plays the physician of the wealthy old woman that Matthew kills to take over her mansion. Very small role, but it's a fun one. And you recognize him as soon as Matthew opens the door and he's there.
Kind of. Like, I mean, he's missing that gray hair of the tall man. And so at first, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, that's Angus Scrimm. Oh shit. And because it's weird to think of him looking young, you know?
Yeah. He looks like, is it Keith Wayne? He looks like Tom from Night of the Living Dead, kind of.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, with those big glasses and mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
Like when he first opens the door. But yeah, you can see all his features, the square jaw and stuff. But he's...
But if he doesn't have that like medium length gray hair,
yeah.
He's hard to recognize without that, I think.
100%, yeah. He's not... Because Angus Scrimm's the tall man. That's who he is for sure. But yeah, other than that, that's really it for the cast. There is one other actor in the cast that... Actually, the only actor in the cast that I could find that had other credits, film acting credits... And that's Cecil Reddick, who plays Mr. Simpson. He's the gas station attendant who's like,
yeah,
I want to go talk to your mom. It's right when Matthew's leaving town.
Right.
But he was in Art Names as Fangs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's the Constable Al in Fangs.
Yeah. That, and anybody who hasn't watched Fangs, we talked about it a lot in our Warped and Faded episode with Lars. But it's on Shudder. If anybody subscribed to Shudder, it might be streaming somewhere. I don't know.
I'm not sure where else. I have the Blu-ray for it because you got to watch that rinse and repeat Snake Farm man get his vengeance.
You want to see a lot of cars being pushed off cliffs. And that's pretty much it for the cast and crew for Scream Bloody Murder.
All right. We'll get more into this film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
First thing I want to point out about this movie is the claw hand prosthetic.
Yes.
Few movies, few films can get a claw hook hand prosthetic right. And Scream Bloody Murder is one that cannot get it right.
No.
It looks like, and I think it's endearing as fuck.
Yes.
You know, as all the movies like Carl Weathers and Happy Gilmore, where it's just...
Why are
somebody,
you talking about a fucking Adam Sandler?
Oh, happy young. God damn it. I think I mentioned this when we did Horror Gives Back a couple of years ago when I first watched Scream Bloody Murder. But Carl Weathers, Matthew, just holding the claw in their hand. You can tell it's a good foot longer than his other arm.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Oh, 100%. I love it too. And you know what the best part about this is you know what I love is when a movie teaches me something because okay. I was watching John and I were watching it and I was like, how does a hook claw work? You know, because if you've, and I'm apologies to any listeners who have a nub, but like, if your hand is cut off and you have a hook hand, and I was like, you have a nub there. How do you control it? Like, is there like a divot in your nub that still has nerves and you can move it? So I looked it up. I Googled, how does a hook hand work?
Okay.
And so the Google answer from MCOP Prosthetics is, body-powered prosthetics are typically a prosthetic hook or hand that is operated by a combination of the body harness, upper body muscles, and the individual's sound limb, all connected with a cable. So shifts in the harness and muscle tension pull on the cable, allowing wearers to open and close the hook hand. So there's some sort of harness that has to go up your arm and over.
Right. And so maybe, it's a combination of muscles throughout the whole arm and tendons.
Which seems like a lot. And I know there's been advances where, you know, your brain can actually power them. And that seems all kinds of weird. Or maybe I just saw that in a movie. But
No. I actually saw this recently. I don't know if it was like a 2020 or Dateline. I don't watch a whole lot of television, but I got Fubo for baseball. And and sometimes I'll turn it on just, you know, regular stations.
Yeah.
And there was a segment on one of those news programs that, yeah, it's basically a robotic hand. And the guy can he was picking up raw eggs, you know, and usually it's very hard to control like the strength of it and showing everything, picking up all sorts, just a regular person can pick it up, you know, with the same type of strength, moving it around, dropping it. And it was all like with this brain and stuff. It was wild.
Yikes.
But yeah, thank you, Scream Buddy Murder, for finding out like how.
Yeah, now we know how prosthetics work.
But yeah, the man that has the prosthetic in this, Matthew, played by Fred Holbert, who is a mystery, he's fucking terrifying in this.
Yeah.
And you never know, because he'll snap. Obviously, he has mommy issues. Mm-hmm. That's what this whole thing's about. And he's just so unpredictable in this.
He reminds me a lot of, I can't remember the character's name, but he's the brother in My Brother Has Bad Dreams, which ironically, if you look for Scream Bloody Murder on Letterboxd, My Brother Has Bad Dreams, that's Scream Bloody Murder is one of its alternate titles.
Okay.
For that. I think I talked about that for our first Blu-ray wishlist episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's unhinged and he's an unsettling to look at, and you never really know which direction he's going. And like that kind of helped drive my double feature pick for this as well, because I picked another one that not only has similar like plot beats, but also the lead male is it's unsettling to watch them. So yeah.
Yeah, he did kind of remind of once Vera's in this mansion that he took over, he's very Kathy Bates to his, you know, captive. Like you never know what he's gonna do next with this person.
Yeah.
And yeah, he is an interesting looking fella. He reminds me, when I first watched it and when I rewatched it recently too, physically he reminds me of Robbie Robertson from The Band. He's the guitar player. He wrote almost all the songs. Look him up, like a side by side, a young Robbie Robertson from The Band. And I watched like, you know, The Last Waltz, Scorsese's Last Waltz. That's about the band's like final performance. It's one of my all time favorites. Okay. But in there too, he looks a lot like
Canadian musician.
Images. He is a Canadian.
Oh God, he does look like him.
Yeah, young.
Okay, yeah.
I know Robbie Robertson had some facial hair, but when he's clean cut, young.
Yeah.
It's to me, I think it's Matthew from fucking Scream Bloody Murder, but he's a terrifying character. Robbie Robertson, I don't know, he could be as crazy.
Yeah. The thing about Matthew is, I mean, his mommy issues are deep seated. And he's so all over the place because, first of all, this movie moves.
Like, the pacing's insane.
It's insanity. Like, I thought Portrait in Crystal was one of the most, like, insane. That just feels like you're watching it at 2x speed.
Yeah.
This, it's not like that, but it's like, it doesn't stop for anything. Like, right off the bat, before you even get the title card for the movie, there's no real intro. We're in the farm field.
Yeah.
He's riding the plow. He's running over his dad. He's falling off, getting his own hand cut off. There's a blood screen wipe. He's sent to the hospital for however many years because he lost his hand. And, you know, moment. Like, there's some screaming when he loses his hand, but there's no like Nick Cage and Moonstruck moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I lost my hand! I lost my bride! Johnny has his hand! Johnny has his bride! You want me to take my heartbreak, put it away, and forget?
No, I love that. It spends like 2 minutes on what could be arguably the most like interesting part of the story.
Yeah.
And I just love it. It moves at 100 miles per hour, like from the beginning.
And it doesn't even stop. Like once he gets back home and he sees that his mom's getting remarried to this guy and this guy's like, call me dad. And he's like, you're not my father.
His stepfather's kind of an asshole.
He is. But he wastes no time axing his stepfather, arguing with his mom. His mom falls, hits her head on a rock. Then he hitchhikes. Then he's got this weird like fear of water. The couple that picks him up, he bashes the boyfriend's head with a rock because he's getting too handsy with his girlfriend. And Matthew doesn't like that. But then he ends up like killing his mom. And we get this is the first time where we see those weird flashes of his mom. Like,
yeah,
he's looking at the hitchhike woman, the girlfriend, and he sees his mom, but it's like this sort of like flashback image of it. And him like, you know, Matthew, and trippy kind of 70s psychedelic, colorful. And then from there, he meets Vera, the artist slash sex worker, and then takes her hostage. And then that's like the remaining 4 hour or 45 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole intro, like up to the point where he meets Vera, and even then it doesn't slow down, but that's when you kind of like, you can catch your breath. Yes. Finally, you're like, okay, I think he's staying still like for the rest of the movie. This is, but yeah, even from then on, the fact that Matthew's so unpredictable, it's still so intriguing, regardless of how fast like the story is moving. Mm-hmm. But yeah, his mommy issues are crazy because he really wants Vera to love him, but not in a sexual way, because he treats her and calls her by his mother's name.
Right.
And he seems to get upset, and actually his killer instinct turns on as soon as any type of mentioning or thought of sex pops up.
Yeah.
Very crazy. Mommy issues.
Yes.
And you know, I have to ask Vera, like, there's a lot of red flags right away from Matthew.
Oh,
like,
my God.
What's up?
Like, okay. I don't want a victim shame, but seriously, Vera, come on. Like right off the bat, when he meets her and he's talking about the painting and what he sees.
Oh yes. That's one of my favorite scenes where he says a man, she's like, what do you see? It's basically a picture. It's a painting of a sunset, more or less, or just colors.
Like the child painted, like a 4-year-old painted that.
And she's like, explain to me what you see in this. And he's like, you know, it's a man being punished by the sun. Go on. And he says, a man being punished for chopping up the man who took his mother away from him. I'm like, okay.
But run, Vera.
Yeah, exactly. Vera should be like, okay, you're fucked up. But, you know, she's obviously very open. She meets creeps day in and day out.
Sure.
But I'm agreeing with you. I'm like, red flag. Just don't go over to his mansion. Like,
and she doesn't help herself later, because at first I'm like, okay, she obviously can't spot red flags. But then when she has her best chance of escape, when Matthew leaves her for a little while, she's tied up to a chair. She manages to get out. I'm like, good for you. And then there's a kid knocking at the door selling candy. She's just like jumping around trying to open the door herself. She's not. And I understand she's got the muffle thing, but you know what you can do is you can break some shit and make a whole bunch of noise.
Yeah.
So the kid can be like, yeah, I was knocking on this door and
kick a window, throw your body against the door.
Yeah. And she's just like carefully trying to like open the door. And then she hears the phone ring and she's like hopping around. She's like, oh, I should try to use the phone call. Like, no, someone is at your fucking door right now. Make some goddamn noise and they will call someone. And then when she finally gets to the phone and manages to dial the operator.
With her tongue. Yeah.
Oh my God.
This is a physical role
for
Lee Mitchell. She does a good job.
And I was like, good for you. I don't think I could dial a rotary phone with my tongue, but maybe I could, I don't know. But like, the operator is sitting there and she's just like, help me. And I'm like, give your fucking address and where you are and what's happening real quick. That takes 2 seconds. And
I don't think she knows the address of the mansion.
she should know like the general vicinity she's in.
Yeah.
Something.
And also, I mean, I'm not trying to defend her actions. She should have, that was her good chance to get mm-hmm. away. But the kid selling candy, all he wanted to do was fucking sell candy.
Oh, I know.
If you're not going to buy candy, he doesn't care if you're tied up. And like, he was there for like 2 minutes knocking on the door yelling, anybody home? Who wants some candy?
And yeah. Like, he wasn't good enough. Good for him. But like, if he would have heard something breaking on the inside, then maybe that would have broken his concentration on having to sell candy. But no, that's she true. Doesn't make any fucking noise. And I hate to victim shame, but I'm sorry, Vera, you deserve what you got.
Oh. No, I agree. She should have been free at that point.
Yep.
But yeah, as she's dialing and as she's finally talking to the operator, Matthew just boom pops up.
Of course. Yeah.
And that's his thing. That's Matthew's thing. Yeah. I mean, he has so many good lines in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
One that I'd noticed a lot of people, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of reviews and views on Letterboxd, but a couple people pointed this line out, and it is really the best, where he's like, see what I do for you? I get groceries and clothes and art stuff and kill people, and do you appreciate it? No. Like,
the best.
It is. That line is, you know, it's the line of the movie. It should be in every trailer if it's not like,
I know. I'm like, someone make a better trailer for this. Like if this gets a release, it'll get a better trailer and I'm sure that will be in it.
Yeah.
But like, I think right before that line comes up, he turns another corner and he goes out, running errands. And by running errands, I mean, he's mugging people.
Yes. I love the montage of him just, and how hard is it for the police in this small little town to be like, let's find the guy with the claw hand, you know, like, where is he? And what are the neighbors? What's her name? Mrs. Anatoli or
something like that.
The old lady's, you know, mansion where that he takes over. Aren't the neighbors seeing this guy take her car?
You would think so. Especially that car is not inconspicuous. Like it sticks out. It's one of those old Rolls Royces or something like that. And yeah, it's not a fucking Honda Civic. That thing sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and we have to talk about, Mrs. Anatoli, I think was her name. That's the old lady who's killed. So he wants to impress Vera. He finds this mansion. He knocks on the door. And Bridie Lee opens the door, who's like her caretaker.
Right.
She was the best. She has a short, obviously, it's basically a two-person cast, but there's a lot of little side characters. She makes the most of her role in the short time she's on screen, you know, asking Matthew all the right questions about his broken down car. Like, well, why don't you go to another house? You know, like, why are you here? Like, totally put off by when the old lady, the wealthy old lady starts yelling, who's there? Who's at the door? She's like, you know, shut up. Like, I'm doing shit. And then screw her. She tells Matthew, he kills her. Immediately, she just screams her head off. And of course, Mrs. Anatoli, the old lady's just whining in the background. I demand to know what's going on in my house. And when Matthew goes to confront and kill her, she puts up a fight.
She does.
She's the only one that puts up a fight in this whole movie. And I really like that, you know, other than Vera. But but I love that scene. And as she's getting killed, her dog is standing there. Mm. I wanted to talk about the dog.
Yeah.
Because the dog's murder, actually, they spend more time is spent on the dog's murder than any of his other victims.
Yeah.
He's suffocating the old lady. There's a quick cut just to the dog standing there, like, you know, standing on all fours, looking all like, yeah, kill the bitch. Like, yes, kill her. And he slowly walks this dog to the kitchen, like, come here, boy, you know, and fucking kills her. Kills the dog. And, like, it's terrible.
And not to defend a murderer, but this... especially somebody who murders a dog. But this seems to be the only one that he's affected by at all. Like, he actually seems like this is hard for him to do. And it seems more like out of necessity. And I'm like, but it's actually not, because the dog is not attacking you and going after you and going to be a problem for you. So,
yeah, the dog could run off and get the cops, you know.
It's not Lassie.
But no, it's a good point, because it does show just kind of how unhinged this guy is, who he slowly, you know, takes this dog and butchers him like on the fucking kitchen cab.
Like he had my sympathy because I'm like, I don't care if you're killing humans, but now you're killing a dog. And I'm sorry, you're showing some emotion, which makes me not hate you as much, but I do hate you because you killed the dog.
Yeah, I was like, okay, kill humans all you want. Wait, not the dog, you fucking monster. Right. It's like, dude, you're unhinged.
This has such a high body count too.
It does. I want to talk about the sailor that he kills because I still think it's fucking hilarious how her custody. Yes, she has a sailor.
Yeah. Well, leading up to that, so you've got his dad who he runs over, his mom who's technically an accident, then the stepdad. Well, the stepdad lives before the mom, but anyway, that's three. And then the hitchhiking couple, so that's another two. Then the maid, then the sailor, the maid, the old lady, the dog, and then we'll get to the end with
this
one. So that's not what 10, 9. But yeah, the sailor's death is fun.
Yeah, I have to point out there's a very effective dummy fall.
Dummy drop
for Matt, out there. That's a good death because the sailor is funny from the start. I mean, he's all about fucking, she got a good body, you know. If you had to pick the favorite of the kills, what would it be? The murders. I mean, I'll jump out. I have to say, it's probably the sailor for me because he ends up. Matthew takes like an artist knife or a painting knife from Vera when he first meets her. Follows the sailor. Stabs him a couple times, turns him around, and slowly cuts his throat.
Yeah.
Then pushes his body off the pier. It's a prolonged death. I enjoy that one.
I know that one is the best one in the movie, but people getting run over by farm equipment is one of my favorite things in the world. So, I mean,
that's a good point.
The dad, even though they don't really show that much. I mean, maybe if there was a cleaned up copy of this, we'll see some, you know, more blood spewing out or something like that. But
they do show his body with his leg, you know, all turned to the side, which, that's a good death.
But the right answer is the sailor. My answer is the dad because he's getting run over by farm equipment.
And that's a good point too. I do want to see a cleaned up version of this mainly because of the gore, because this is on the poster of this. It has a tagline that says, the first motion picture to be called Gornography. I want to see a cleanup version to see how true that is. I also want to get a better look at like some of the practical, obviously the practical effects with the gory wounds and the blood, but
Scream Bloody Gore by Death could be a perfect outro song.
Oh, there we go. I still haven't picked one. But I do want to see some of the clear shots of those weird hallucinations he has of his mom. Cause like you said, they look haunting. She's, you know, at times she'll have blood on the side of her mouth or her hair's all crazy. It looks like she has darks
under
her eyes.
It's like all wavy and like, ooh, Matthew.
I want to see that.
Yeah. The other answer to my favorite death in this though is at the end, and it's not Vera. And again, this is where, you know, we get into the huge spoilers here, folks, but Matthew's death.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Are you committing harakiri, Matthew?
Fuck yes.
What the fuck? Out of nowhere. Like, out of all the ways you could have guessed for him to kill himself, that would have been my very last one. I mean, that or the way that my brother has bad dreams ends. But, like,
I love it. It's a downer of an ending.
Yeah.
I think most people will expect Vera to escape. Yeah. She doesn't. She's killed.
Mm-hmm.
She gets to the door, finally opens it. Matthew's there and he fucking kills her with his hook, his claw hand.
Should have gotten away when the kid was there selling candy, Vera. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's your own doing. Okay. You finally open the door, but too little, too late. Yeah. But then, Matthew's breakdown is the best. As soon as he kills her, he runs out. He pulls a guy out of the car, drives the car. He jumps out of the car, runs into a church and he claws himself to death.
Yeah.
He just guts himself.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good. And I did want to talk about, again, D.P. Burham, there's a lot of cool angles throughout this, especially in the house, but throughout the film. But that final scene is shot really well. There's like this. So Matthew is having these hallucinations of his mom, of multiple moms. They all surround him and start kind of like, I don't know, just hounding him. and he cuts himself open with his claw hand, and he crawls and he crawls over to the altar and looks up at the crucifix. And there's this awesome dolly shot that just goes out of the church and, down the aisle and stuff, and kind of just freezes. And that reminded me of very De Palma. I'm watching
very much. Yeah.
So again, Burham killing it. And a great fucking ending to that movie.
Yeah. And the thing is I'm a little conflicted about the ending because Vera is a sex worker, and the fact that she doesn't get away, makes me feel like the movie is punishing her for what she does. But, and I love a downbeat ending, it's that seems a little unfair given the circumstances, but also she's fucking dumb. She doesn't do things right. So I don't want to completely base it on what she does for a living. I don't want the movie punishing her for that or assuming that the movie is doing that. I hope the movie's just punishing her for being dumb.
Yeah, I feel like the movie is just going for Matthew being completely unhinged, killing whoever is in it. But yeah, no, that I thought that too for a bit. Also, I wanted to point out before we get into double features mm-hmm. recommendations, I don't know if you noticed this, but when he accidentally kills his mother, or he pushes her down while he's saying, "I'm going to kill you," he holds her and she's dead, and he looks up and he has blood, he's crying blood. Yeah. Is that blood from her, blood from his stepfather? Or was he crying tears of blood? I couldn't figure that out.
I think I was I thought the same thing, but I was no, they too perfectly look like tears.
Yeah.
So that to be, if you get blood from someone else's dead body on you, it's going to be smeared all over your face. So
yeah, it was weird.
Maybe it's supposed to be symbolic of something. I don't know.
I don't either, because he was nuts at that. Yeah, I don't know. That's why we need to find Fred Hulbert and see if he can explain to us that Matthew character.
Maybe Fred is Robbie Robertson.
Oh my God. Because this is his only acting credit. Then he's like, I'm going on tour. This is, the band's getting big.
Yeah.
The band was big before then, but.
Oh, it was? Okay. I don't know anything about the band. So.
They're great. Watch The Last Waltz.
Mm.
It's good.
Okay.
So yeah, I think I would definitely recommend this film.
Oh, 100%,
I would love to see it get a release for a lot of the reasons that I already said, but I think it would do great at a boutique label.
Yeah.
What would you pair with this, though? What's your double feature pick?
Kurosawa's Harakiri.
Oh, shit.
No, I'm kidding. Jesus Christ. No.
That's mine.
No. I'm not going to do this. I think there's a few things, obviously, that come to mind, especially with him holding her captive and buying her things to pursue her art. Stephen King's Misery obviously mm-hmm. comes to mind. Wait, who directed that? Rob Reiner?
That is Rob Reiner. Yeah.
Yeah. I said Stephen King's, but he wrote it. It's his thing.
Yeah.
I thought about Rolling Thunder just for hook 'em,
yes.
hook 'em double feature or something like that. But ultimately I landed on one. I think I talked about this. I know I've talked about it on a previous episode, and I'm pretty sure it was a best of new to me. Not this last one, but the one before. Twisted Nerve from 1968. And this is based off of having a creepy male lead character who is obsessed with a young girl. Martin is the main character in Twisted Nerve, but he takes it to a different type of fucked up extreme and pretends to be mentally challenged in order to gain the sympathy of Susan in this one. He soon becomes obsessed with her at home, much like Matthew. He has a contentious relationship with his mother and his stepfather. There is also this moment of captivity in it. Twisted Nerve's probably most well known for that Bernard Herrmann whistle score that Tarantino ripped off for Kill Bill.
Oh, okay.
That one actually has a Blu-ray coming from Umbrella Entertainment, which you can pre-order for folks who are interested in that. But yeah, Twisted Nice. Nerve 1968 for mine, for just these creepy, obsessive, unhinged male double feature, I guess.
I need to watch this. Yeah, it has Frank Finlay in it, who played Van Helsing and Louis Jordan's.
Yeah.
He stole the show in that Count Dracula
yeah,
for me.
It's great.
Nice.
What about you for your double feature?
So you just named mine.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's totally cool. Mine involves a lead character who loses both his hand and an important woman in his life. Mm-hmm. It's a claw hand double feature. And this one, I think, has one of the best looking claw or hook hand prosthetics.
This one knows how to do it. Yeah.
It has the whole, you know, like you just mentioned, like how the muscles control the claw. It has, it shows him putting it on up on his shoulder, the strap, the harness there. Rolling Thunder from 1977. This is directed by John Flynn and written by Paul Schrader. It's about a soldier, a major, who spends 7 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam. He's tortured daily with a few other soldiers. Tommy Lee Jones is one of the other soldiers. Mm-hmm. He returns home and he's applauded as a hero, given a Cadillac by the local dealership. And he's given a case full of silver dollars. Some guys see him on TV at this ceremony and they break into his home to steal the money. They jam his hand into a garbage disposal, which leads him to lose his hand. They kill his wife.
And his son.
And his son. And then, you know, as he rehabs and gets his hook hand, he goes after the guys that killed his family, using his claw and, of course, other weapons for some gnarly kills.
Yeah.
It's kind of the polar opposite of Scream Bloody Murder, because it gives us a reverse reaction of someone losing a hand. You know, he wants revenge and he doesn't lose it. He just wants revenge on these people for killing his soon to be ex-wife, but his wife and his son.
Right.
But there's a lot of murdering involved, just different reasons. It's currently on Tubi if you haven't seen it. I'm sure there's releases of this too.
Yeah.
Rolling Thunder.
I can't remember who put it out, but yeah, it's everyone should have this movie on their shelf. It's so fucking good.
It is. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
That concludes April Showers of Blood.
Hey, thanks for getting soaked with us.
What about our next episode? What's your pick?
So, okay. We have not visited Italy since January. And I get itchy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We're due for a trip back. And honestly, Giallo January, your pick was Italian. Mine wasn't. So, like, I haven't even technically gone there. But I want this to be a fun trip for you. So we're going to be covering a movie that not only has twins, but has some of the most knuckle-biting, over-dramatic acting that you will ever see.
Oh, yes. Tell me.
Yeah, we're going to call next month Mania, or at least we're going to start it off that way, because we're going to be watching Mania from 1974, directed by Renato Pocelli. As of this recording, it has 208 views on Letterboxd, and there are a few different versions on YouTube. All of them are pretty much the same quality, so just find the one that looks the best to you on your TV. But this is about Professor Brecht, who is conducting experiments in his villa. So we get a basement, a scientific laboratory, which are, you know, my favorite. He's conducting experiments in his villa where he lives with his wife, Lisa, his twin brother, Germano, and a few others. When Brecht discovers his wife and brother having an affair, he makes a plan to kill him, his brother, in a laboratory accident, but it goes terribly wrong. This causes multiple people to go mad and others to try to discover the secret of Brecht's experiments. I'm going to say this up front. Some people are going to hate me for this pick. John hates this movie. He doesn't hate it. He gave it 2 stars. I gave it 3. Probably give it 3.5 when I rewatch it. Who knows? But you definitely have to be in a mood for this one, because, and if you're not a fan of like the overdramatic, may not be for you, but I'm not making any apologies because I'm picking this one for Lance.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yes. And if Lance doesn't like it, you can listen to us fight about it in the next episode. So there.
It's going to be a good episode either way.
So yeah, Mania 1974. That one is on YouTube for folks to check out. If you aren't already, you can follow this podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at Hex Massacre.
You can follow me on Letterboxd and Instagram at El Shibe.
Thanks for joining us again for April Showers of Blood, and we'll see you back next month for Mania 1974.
Bye.
Bye.
Tractors, oh tractors, they're so much fun. Tractors, oh tractors, they get the job done.
Tractors work all day, tractors work all night. Gotta bale that hay, gotta bale it tight. They can be different colors, green, red, or blue,
or yellow, or purple. wish I could too. Tractors, oh tractors, they're so much fun. Tractors, oh tractors, they get the job done. They have great big tires, so they don't slip and slide. They sound like if you're ever on a farm, maybe ask to take a ride with the farmer and his tractor. Gonna have a great time. Oh, tractors, oh, tractors, they're so much fun. Tractors, oh, tractors, they get the job done.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video! Woo!